Welcome to the Distance Hiker Podcast with me, your host, Matthew. I interview long-distance hikers just like you and me with the aim of inspiring your next long-distance walk, wherever that may be, or however you choose to do it. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, welcome to episode 4 of the Distance Hiker Podcast. Yes, episode 4 already. 4 weeks in, can't quite believe it myself, but here we are. And if you are returning after listening to episodes 1, 2, and of course 3, I applaud you for your commitment. And if you're tuning in for the first time and this is your very first Distance Hiker audio experience episode, welcome. I have got another fine guest for your listening ears this week, introducing David Matthews from The Listening Walk. What is The Listening Walk? I hear you cry. Well, I tend to pay attention to as many people as I can who are joining UK long distance hiking, that wonderful hiking community that I have built over on Facebook page. Well, I say I built it, a lot of people joined it. I just sort of approved them and enjoy watching the group grow. But anyway, so I saw that a few months ago, a page request came through from The Listening Walk. Intrigued, I decided to look into the page and was delighted with what I saw. I saw the happiest looking man ever called David Matthews, who was walking around the UK raising money for a little known charity called the Samaritans. David wasn't walking long distance paths. No, that would be too easy. Instead, he was walking to each of the UK's Samaritan branches while also answering phone calls at those branches as a Samaritan volunteer, all to raise money for his local Samaritans branch in Doncaster and to encourage 1,000 people to volunteer their time as a Samaritan. I have no doubt that David will reach this goal. Now, for those of you who have not heard of the Samaritans, which I don't think there's going to be many of you, they are a confidential 24/7 phone line here to offer support for those struggling to cope. Because of what David is doing, this episode feels incredibly important to me. Like almost everyone I know, I have suffered from poor mental health in the past, and particularly in the last 16 months during this ridiculous and very strange pandemic we have all lived through. I honestly found some parts of our conversation difficult, and I think that may come through in the recording, and actually I kind of hope it does. These conversations are important, and I'm very grateful to have spoken to David about mental health and the Samaritans and what he's up to. Talking to David about why he's doing this walk and the planning involved, in addition to what it's actually like to be a Samaritan volunteer, was eye-opening. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I've personally considered, and I'm still considering, becoming a Samaritan phone volunteer. So, the end of this episode was pretty much about me asking what it's like to be a volunteer with the Samaritans. I'm not one yet, and I won't be for a little while yet, but I hope that if it's something you're considering, then this episode swings you. After talking to David, I know it's something I want to do in the very near future. So, without further delay, here we go with episode 4 of the Distance Hiker Podcast with David Matthews from The Listening Walk. I hope you enjoy the show.
And then the sort of volunteers vote in a new director, and then you sort of serve for 3 years. And it's still a voluntary role as well, but it's quite a lot of work.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
So that's managing the entire branch.
Yeah, so wow. Everything from recruitment to training to outreach to publicity. you sort of oversee the whole lot. Cool.
That's a heck of a volunteer role.
It is. You tend to have deputies for each of those roles as well. So you might have a deputy for training, deputy for outreach.
Gotcha.
But you've still got to sort of manage that. So that's wow. when staying tonight. Ilse. And then tomorrow, a walk to Luton from Hitchin, which is not. Quite a nice walk. It's about 10 miles that. So.
Oh, okay.
Maybe a bit longer because I've just been looking on, because it's basically a main road. Mm. I've just been looking on my ordnance survey maps, and there's a bit of a more sort of rural route, which is what I'm going to do.
So. Brilliant. Well, I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah.
I saw you. I have the privilege of sort of seeing everybody who joins the Facebook page. So when somebody joins who's a page, obviously that jumped out at me, and I saw yours and I had a look at it because I always do. And it just jumped out at me, and I thought, wow, that's amazing. I've got to speak to this guy and see if I can at least, you know, just have a conversation. So, you know, to have you on the podcast today is something really special. I mean, for me personally, I guess I'm being relatively selfish with this podcast because actually I am quite interested in volunteering as a Samaritan at some point in the future.
Yeah.
When time is right for me.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm quite looking forward to picking your brains and just finding out more about the role, but also diving into, you know, the walk that you're doing.
Yeah, perfect.
Everything you've been up to. So, yeah, really appreciate you coming on today.
It's a pleasure to have you. And thanks for the plug on your newsletter the other day.
You saw it. Yeah, brilliant. Saw that. Yeah, no problem.
Thank you.
No problem. No, you're more than welcome, more than welcome. And I've had a few clicks, so I think there was obviously some interest there, which is good.
Brilliant.
Tell me about the walk. Let's go into that, what you're doing first of all.
Yeah.
Because I've got a lot of questions, but I'll let you introduce it.
Yeah, so initially it was just a walk. There was no title. It became the listening walk. Mm. But the idea was originally planned probably 7 years ago, to actually walk to all the Samaritans branches in the UK and Ireland. That was the basic idea. And there's 199 physical branches of the Samaritans. So they're in a brick building. And then there's what we call our correspondence branch, where you can still actually write an old-fashioned letter. Mm. And then we have festival branch that actually go to big music festivals and small festivals and be there to support people that are actually attending the festivals. And
So the festival ones are not just they're not sort of stands to inform people, they actually are there to offer support as well.
Locations. So I actually spoke because I wanted to sort of almost visit the correspondence branch and the festival branch in some way, although I couldn't, because they don't have a physical branch, but I managed to catch up with the volunteers that sort of support the branches or maybe are more heavily involved. And the festival branch, because I asked what kind of people actually go and visit them, and they said there's a lot of relationship problems, so couples go to festivals and, things happen. People obviously have a lot of substances and things like that, but it brings things to the fore, so they might come and, it brings a lot of emotions out, so they're coming and talking. So there's a wide range, really, and it was quite fascinating to find out. And correspondence branch, where you can actually write a physical letter, I thought that was probably a dying art, but I spoke to the correspondence branch director, who is also a volunteer at Kingston branch in London, and she said, they're actually recruiting new volunteers to support the correspondence branch because there's been an increase in written word, in letters coming. So
I never knew that was a thing.
Yeah, in this day and age, that's quite surprising.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Wow. So there is actually an option for people to write into. To actually get a written response back.
That's right. And all it is free post Samaritan letters. That's all it is. So if anybody wanted to write in, that's all they have to put in the envelope and it gets there.
That's remarkable.
They also get a handwritten response as well. It's not typed, it's a handwritten response, which I think is brilliant.
Which is special as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
Because there's a there's a sense of thoughtfulness that comes from having that handwritten reply back, which I suspect when somebody's in a place where they are obviously wanting that, it comes across far better when there's a human element on that rather than just a typed letter.
Absolutely. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Wow.
So the idea was to walk to all the branches, and in the beginning I didn't have any idea how far that was, but when I'd mapped out, but I put the branches on a map of the UK and Ireland, and then sort of started working on sort of some rudimentary sort of route.
When did this idea come about? When did you have that idea? 7 years ago?
Yeah, 7 years ago. So I'm a listening volunteer at Doncaster Samaritans. And my initial thought was to walk to all the Samaritans branches in the Yorkshire and Humberside region, which is about 12, 13 branches.
Which in itself would have been a mission.
It would have been a nice 2 or 3 week holiday, I think. So that was the idea.
Okay.
And then I just started plotting those on the map, and then realised that actually when I got to the northern end of the Yorkshire and Humber region, it wasn't much further to get to like the northeastern region.
Okay.
And then of course, you do the north, you think, I'll just map that in as well. And then you realise actually you're not far from the Scottish border. So why don't you go.
You might as well keep going.
Well, and that's how it was really.
Yeah.
And I always sort of talk about how like the stars align, you know.
Yes.
And if the route had been this awkward sort of, well, I've now got to cut back here and I've got to then cut back over there, and it became awkward, I'd have probably stopped. But it didn't. It sort of just fluidly went on. And before I knew it, I'd mapped out all 199 brick branches.
Wow. So from 7 years ago, having this seed of an idea, which is now obviously involving you actually doing it, how long did it take for that to develop into you actually leaving? So the planning aspect of it.
Yeah. So that would have been probably, I say seven, it was probably 8 years ago now. So initial idea was probably 2013. And then I put the plan and everything in a little folder on my desktop, and it just stayed. I changed computer a couple of times, but it just moved to each computer. And I kept looking at it now and then and sort of thinking, well, could I do it? Is it possible?
Yeah.
And then the final piece of the jigsaw was probably the summer of 2018, because I got a holiday home in Scotland. I don't know if you've seen any of that, but I'm now living in Scotland. I've got a holiday home right up on the west coast on the Knoydart Peninsula.
Oh, wow.
And I live in a little annex next door, and it's pretty much a one-man band. So I look after the guests, do all the cleaning, everything.
Oh, I see. So the holiday home where people can come and stay, but you actually live there as well.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And because financially I couldn't just leave, I haven't got any money, so I thought, I need the business to keep ticking over. So summer 2018, I had a chance conversation with somebody on Knoydart, and just a young woman and we all know each other anyway, it's only a small community, and it just got talking and asking her what her plans were. And she said, she had a few ideas, and then she said, but more immediate, I want to move out of home. She said, everything's fine at home. Mum and dad are fine, we're fine. She said, but I'm 20 now, I want a bit of independence. So I said, do you fancy looking after the holiday home if I do this walk? And if the answer had been no, I'd have probably still been at home now. But she said, I will do it. I'd like to do it. Yeah.
It's interesting how with these things, these challenges and walks that people take on, there's always this tipping point where the opportunity like this arises for everybody. There's a point where you go, now it's time for me to do that.
Absolutely.
And then, there's obviously people like you who go, right, I'm going to take that opportunity and just do it. And I love that mentality. I think it's amazing.
And so that was probably August, September 2018. So I set a starting date of April the 14th, 2019. And there was a couple of reasons for that. One is, the main one was that I wanted to do a shift. I wanted to start from Doncaster, which is where I did my training.
Okay.
And I wanted to do a shift because the plan was to try and do a shift on the phones at each of the branches I visited.
Yes, I saw that, which I think was amazing in itself. Yes.
So I thought, well, I want to start with a little shift at my home branch and then set off. And the only sort of shift that we did was 9 till 12 on a Sunday morning. And the rest of them were afternoon and evening shifts. So it was 9 till 12 on a Sunday morning, and we did it every other week. So ideally, I'd have set off. I wanted to set off when the clocks had gone forward to give me a better chance
of course.
The light.
Yeah.
And then, so I would have started on the 7th of April, but it was a shift. We didn't do the Sunday. It was a week we didn't do the Sunday, Monday shift. So it was the 14th. So I started planning from August till the following April. But as ever, this time just goes like that.
And of course,
before you know it, you're there.
And then, a lot of people walking routes at the moment, you had, COVID in the middle of that. So how did that impact with, how much did you manage to get done before you had to make the decision to stop?
I started April the 14th, 2019. So I got to sort of the middle of March, 2020. I'd had a couple of little breaks because I'd had a couple of little injuries, not too long, but it stopped me walking a little bit. So by the middle of March 2020, I'd done 3,000 miles and I'd visited 90 branches.
Wow.
So, and I'd done, and I'd started from Doncaster and gone north. So I went up the east side of the Pennines and I'd been all the way up to Thurso, and we've got branches on Shetland and Orkney. So I'd been there, and then I'd walked all the way across to Ullapool and got the ferry to Stornoway.
Yeah.
And then walked down Lewis and Harris, Isle of Skye. I walked down the West Highland Way.
Okay.
And then into Glasgow, down the west side of the Pennines, did Wales. And then I just got to Swansea, and that's when I stopped.
And the bit that gets me with this, all of this, you had a plan for how you would link all of these up before you left.
Yeah. Wow.
Because, as you know, I kind of admin the group UK long distance hiking. I enjoy long distance hiking. So that's obviously very linear, and you have a well signposted route on a map that says, and a map and a guide, etc. Plenty of online information about where to go, how to get there, apps to support you, etc. But you're not doing that. You're making your own routes.
Yes.
Yeah. Going from A to B, Samaritan branch to Samaritan branch. Obviously, there's going to be days where there's not going to be a Samaritan branch within a walking distance of another one.
Yeah.
So you're going to be camping and staying places overnight, I'm assuming, as well.
That's right.
Obviously. I'm just amazed by the amount of planning that must have gone into this. It's that bit blows my mind.
Yeah. The longest distance was so far, well, it will be the longest distance, was from the branch on Stornoway on the Isle of Lewis. The next branch was Greenock, just north of Glasgow.
And how long was that in?
15 days.
15 days?
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
wow.
So that was a mixture of wild camping,
camping,
people's houses.
Mm-hmm.
It was a whole mix of everything.
Amazing.
It's interesting that, Matthew, I'd never thought about that, that we as walkers, we tend to go, oh, I'm going to do that part of that footpath or that route.
It's all there for us. It's all there for us, and it's very A to B. So what you're doing is really remarkable, but it's the planning aspect, that, and obviously the walking itself is something, but it's that planning and linking together these branches is the bit that really stands out to me as a challenge. I mean, how do you work that out? Do you plan the shortest route, or do you plan the most scenic route, or a bit of both?
A bit of both. So what I tend to do is, and just to sort of show that it didn't work as I thought it was going to be. And it was pretty, I always admit it was pretty much a schoolboy error.
Okay.
I set off. So when I set off, for example, let's say the branches were 30 miles apart.
Yeah.
So I'd go, right, 30 miles apart. I'm not going to do that in a day because it's not sustainable over such a long period of time. So it's a marathon, not a sprint. So yes. I thought, right, so that's going to be 2 15-mile days. But of course, once you get out there, you realise actually that isn't 2 15-mile days because there isn't a campsite at 15 miles. There just isn't on the route. The campsite over on the northeast somewhere, and it's there's one at 13 miles or there's one at 80 miles. Take your pick. But then that starts messing. So then you think, well, actually, I don't know if I'm going to make the branch on day two. I might have to, because I might have to camp somewhere else. So the whole thing quickly got thrown into turmoil.
And are you planning on, or have you, sorry, been staying at campsites and sort of recognised accommodation opposed to wild camping for this as well?
In Scotland, I did some wild camping.
Of course.
In England, I possibly could have done. I was chatting to a guy today, funnily enough, and I said, yeah, I'm going on to campsites. And he said, oh, have you not thought about wild camping? And I said, it's fine in Scotland because you can pretty much wild camp where you want.
You can, yes. Yeah.
In England, you can probably wild camp, but you need some local information.
So, you do. It does help, yeah.
Yeah. Somebody locally might go, oh, you could have gone onto that heath over there. Nobody did bother you. But I don't know that. So I have to, because in like 3 days' time, I need to be at this Samaritan's branch. I can't leave anything to chance. I can't sort of go, well, I'll risk camping in that little woodland that I've seen on the map.
Yeah.
Because if at 7 o'clock at night somebody comes along and goes, you can't camp here, mate, off you go.
Sure.
That's pretty much knackered the whole job.
Of course, so, yeah.
So I need to be a bit more certain. So
it has structure then for you actually staying in places.
Yeah. Whereas in Scotland, I was walking between branches and I'm going, I know I can wild camp. That's fine. Nobody's going to bother me. So it was a bit easier, but it is a bit more of a logistical nightmare in England.
Of course. Wow. And so was there something that inspired you to walk this opposed to doing something like cycling? Has that crossed your mind?
Yeah, definitely, because we have a little, we have a newsletter comes through to the branches quarterly, and it's called Samaritan's News, and it's just an internal newsletter, and it's great because it's got information about all sorts of things. One section of which is people who've been fundraising that month or that quarter, and there's people parachute jumping and swimming.
I bet there's a whole variety of things. Yeah, people do.
And none of which, and I thought I'd like to do something, but none of that appealed. So, and I like cycling, but I'm a bit of a Sunday cyclist. You know, 10 miles is probably far enough as long as there's a pub at the end. And
I sympathise with that. Yeah.
So, and I've tried running in the past and, you know, anything further than a 5K, it's like...
Yeah, running between them doesn't sound fun at all. Yeah, walking sounds better.
So it got to the point where I thought, let's do this. So there were other thoughts of fundraising and doing different things, but I thought, no, I like walking, and if I'm going to do something, why not make it epic?
Of course. What came close in terms of fundraising ideas instead of this?
The parachute jump did actually come a little bit.
Did it quite close,
and then I just thought, do I really want to do it? And it was a bit of a no.
Fair enough.
And I think also I wanted to do something probably a bit more than that as well, because I thought, okay, you can make a lot of it, but then you jump out of a plane. And I thought, but there's lots of other people jumped out of planes, so
you wanted a journey,
yeah,
by the sounds of it, rather than a sort of 30-second. I don't know how long it takes to jump out of a plane and get to the ground, but you know. By the sounds of it, you wanted a real journey and a story to tell as you went along.
And something a bit more unique, I think.
It is unique. That's the thing with this that I liked about it. It's really unique. I think it's hard now, getting harder to find unique challenges to do. You know, and that's not to discredit people who do challenges, because I think charity challenges are
important. I was just going to say that.
And amazing. Yeah. But it is still hard, because it's nice to have a unique idea. And I think those unique ideas do draw attention, and therefore, by their nature, more money for the cause you're donating for.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is remarkably unique. Yeah. You know, no one's thought of that before, and that's why I think it's super interesting.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so I really, really like what you're doing. And in terms of like the walking then itself, did you have any interest in walking, or did you do any long distance hiking prior to doing the walk itself?
Yeah, but not, I mean, I was in the scouts as a youngster, so I did lots of walking, particularly Peak District. Did lots of and quite long distance walks as well. And then later in life, as work and family and things like that get in the way,
And I'm in that stage at the moment. So
yeah,
I do more talking about walking than I do actual walking. I sympathise.
And that was pretty much it. And then there'd be the odd occasion where somebody would say, "Oh, we're off walking. We're doing this or we're doing that." But it'd be more like it's sort of 10 to 15 mile type walks rather than your anything more epic or longer than that.
So I
think, to be honest, when I got to the point of starting this, I wasn't match fit that way. And I don't know how far down you've scrolled, Matthew, but I accidentally scrolled a long way down my Facebook the other week, and I definitely looked a bit more portly than I do now.
You notice the difference.
Yeah,
I've not gone down too far. I've gone a couple of weeks.
That's probably fine.
I'll stop there. Yeah. Well, I think, but obviously you've had to stop like the rest of us too.
Yes.
With coronavirus, and I think many of us have probably put on a love handle here and there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's okay, isn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah. Had the summer to burn it off, but that's amazing. In terms of maps and things like that, sort of obviously there's a lot, going back to the planning again, there's a lot of planning that's involved in this. How do you, are you using your phone to navigate all of this? Or, because obviously you're not taking, the entire catalogue of Ordnance Survey maps which would be required for this thing.
Well, that was my initial, I got in touch with the Ordnance Survey quite early on because, of course, going back to my scouting days, that was my, I'm quite happy with a map and compass. So I actually contacted them and I said, is there any way we could do some sort of map exchange stroke relay thing where I got to a certain point and then popped into one of the outlets or something and switched my map?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So that was my initial. And then this lady actually emailed, she was wonderful actually. And it was a bit exasperated, this email, and went, why on earth would you do that? Why not just take electronic maps and we'll donate 3 years worth of premium membership to the maps.
Oh, wonderful.
Which was great.
Of course. So using the map, the OS, mapping software.
And I don't know if you've, you'll know it yourself, Matthew, but when I first got it, there were certain limitations to it. And so I've had it now. So they sent it me. They gave me the subscription probably January or February before I started, so January, February 2019. And I started using it and I found it, there were slight things that were slightly cumbersome, but they've done certain updates and they've realised as well. And now I find it actually quite good.
It is a good app. I've used it a few times and I can recommend it. But I was wondering about that. So I'm glad you're not having to carry, several maps in your bag. But that's a relief. And in terms of kit as well, I noticed you're instead of using a backpack, you're using
a walking trailer.
How's that working for you, especially with things like kind of jump fences and stiles and gates, etc.?
Yeah. So I tend to stay more on main roads. There's a few reasons for that. One of the reasons is that I want to try and be visible so people see the Samaritans and they see what I'm doing and respond to it. So what tends to happen is when I look at the next section of the route, I'll look and I'll go, right, that's a pretty busy main road. So what have I got in the way of alternatives? So I use Google Maps and I use Ordnance Survey. So I'll plot the route the night before. So I know where I'm going, but I haven't necessarily plotted the route.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because to plot it there's so many things I have to do with either, because I'm contacting branches. I'm now contacting branches towards the end of July because they need a little bit of notice as well.
Of course, yeah.
And I'm trying to plot campsites. And then once you contact the branches, there's quite a bit of an exchange with either it's email or text. And then sometimes somebody else will get in touch with the branch and say, oh, it's been passed to me. And then sometimes somebody will get in touch and say, I'm at this branch and you're going to be walking this lake. Can you tell me the route? Because there's a group of us want to walk. So you're managing all this. And then, of course, social media and things like that. So rather than get to the point where I've plotted to the minutiae each route, I leave it to the night before. So when I'm just relaxing, I've caught up with everything and I'll go, right, let's have a look at tomorrow. And I do two things. First of all, look at Google Maps and I go, right, okay, point A to B is going to be 15 miles. Okay, that's fine. Where's it taking me? So I look in a bit more detail. And then I start flicking between Ordnance Survey and Google, and I go, right, okay, that looks fine. That looks nice, quiet roads, a couple of cycle paths, maybe a bridleway. Fine, let's just do that. If I look and it's like 15 miles and I go, right, straight down the A623, and it looks a bit of a pig, and it's going to be busy, and I drop the little walking man on, see if there's any footpaths or pavements, no. Right, okay, let's have a look at the alternatives. If there's like a cycle path or some bridle way that runs sort of off at a tangent a bit but then cuts across, and it 15 miles becomes 17 miles, I'll go, that's the route I'll take because it's going to be better.
Sure.
If the alternative is going to be 23 miles, I think, sod it, I'll just get my head down and walk straight down the A whatever and walk towards the traffic. I've got my high vis on and I'll just go for it.
And has the majority of the walking therefore been on pavement then over off-road terrain?
Yeah.
And how have you found that on your feet? Because it's obviously it is harder.
It is harder, yeah. Yeah, so I've built up quite the, you know, the muscles generally are fine now. So you know, the legs don't ache and stuff like that. And but the feet do. So so I've just got into the habit of every morning when I get up that the feet, it's like walking on glass for 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
Just till the blood starts circulating.
Yeah.
You hobble about. I mean, this morning I was on a campsite near Hartford and I got out of the tent to walk over to the toilet block and I just looked like a ridiculous person just
hobbling. Yeah, I know what you mean.
And if somebody was looking out of the caravan or tent and going, that guy's going to walk 18 miles today, is not a chance.
Yeah.
But then, as you know, by the time circulation gets going, by the time tent's away, you've had your breakfast, you've had brush your teeth, that's gone. And so, whereas in the first maybe a few months, I'd probably panic about that a bit. I just sort of think, oh, a bit painful, but give it 15 minutes, I'll be fine. When I first started doing, look, I managed 2 7-mile training walks. That was it. That's all I managed.
Just before you started?
Before I started.
Yeah.
And the first one I walked, and I'd just got my normal hiking boots on, and my knees were killing the day after, and I thought, well, that's not a good sign. I'm not going to manage this.
Yeah.
And then I had a conversation with a friend who does a lot of running in Norfolk. She's run for years, and she carries a lot of weight. She always has, and that, you know, that's fine. So there's a lot of pressure on her knees, and I had a conversation with her, and she said, "I use Hoka trainers."
Oh, Hoka One, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, she said, but they do a. She said, "I'm sure they do a waterproof boot, which they is do, called the Hoka Speed Goat."
Yeah.
So I looked at that and I switched to the Hoka, and they've got a really thick cushion.
They have, yeah.
And within the second walk, the pain had gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they're really working for you then. They're quite light as well, aren't they? Which is probably a relief.
Very light. They're great. The only problem is that because you're on hard surfaces, that thick cushioning probably starts giving way after about 600 or 700 miles.
Okay.
So the tops are still in quite good condition, but I can feel that the inside gubbins bits started to fail.
Yeah. You feel that concrete getting closer and closer.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So how many of those have you managed to get through so far?
I'm on pair 7.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And I've just ordered pair 8, and they'll be waiting for me when I get to Leicester.
Oh, okay. So you're sending them ahead of yourself.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Brilliant. And so the generosity, I mean, when people like yourselves do walks like this, generosity, I think, is something that, you know, is a theme. For instance, Ordnance Survey giving you the subscription for 3 years.
Yeah.
What other experiences have you had? And are they quite frequent experiences where people might say, for instance, give you a free campsite for the night for what you're doing, or, you know, some free gear or food or a bed for the night like what you've got tonight? Is that quite a common occurrence?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's the only way. I mean, I've probably spent $5,000 out of my own money so far. And
that's not a lot considering how long you've been doing this for.
Absolutely. Well. And that's because a lot of campsites have gone free. Or I've sat down in a coffee shop or something and had a conversation with somebody across the table. And then when I've gone to pay, they've said, oh, there was a guy sat in the corner, but he overheard your conversation and came and paid and said, oh, I'll pay for that guy as well. You know, there's been loads like that. Somebody pulled up in a car today and saw my T-shirt and saw my trailer and everything, just stopped and said, I think it's amazing what you're doing. Here's 20 quid. So it's endless, Matthew. It really is. It really is. So it's... You know, I'd have probably been spending over double that I've spent, you know.
Of course. And on, you know, things like campsite fees and food, it does add up after a while.
Yeah. I mean, even sometimes in the supermarket, you know, I remember once going into a Waitrose because they do a little vegan sushi because I'm vegan. I've been vegan 33 years. They do a little vegan sushi, and I went in for this sushi to pick it up. And this woman came up and went, oh, that's interesting, what are you doing? You know, she was a shop worker there. And they got the management out, we did a few pictures. And they said, well, you know, you don't have to pay for that, but get whatever you want. And I got an orange juice and this sushi, and she went, and the lady said, get some more things. And I said, no, I've got my walking trailer with my bag. That's all I can carry. And so there's also sometimes this surprise that you aren't going, well, I'll fill a trolley full of stuff, thank you very much, and taking advantage of that. And she said, you know, that's nothing. And I said, but it is everything. You don't realise, actually, for me, that's everything. So
those small acts of generosity are really big, and I think for some, you know, for what you're doing, that must really add up and add a kind of constant validation of that kind of generosity that humanity has. I suspect that's really,
absolutely,
really good.
I was telling a story just earlier, just before you messaged and said that you were ready. I was talking about three guys in Walsall that obviously lived rough. I wouldn't say they were full-on homeless because they didn't have all the belongings, but I'd say they lived quite rough, and they were asking, and they just walked past them, and they started a conversation about the walk, and we had a nice chat. It was great. And just as I was walking off, one of them stepped forward and said, can I make a donation? And I said, yeah, well, I've got a little card that I hand out with a link to the donate page. And I said, look, get the card and you can, because I thought, even if he doesn't, that's fine. We've saved face a bit here. But he said, no, I want to give you this. And he gave me a 50 pence piece. And it was obvious it was the only 50 pence piece he had. And I said, well, why don't I gift it back to you? It was an awful cold day. I said, I'll gift it back to you, then you can get yourself a cup of tea later. And he went, no. And he put it in my hand and folded my fingers around it. He said, I want to make a donation. And that 50p's worth thousands, you know. I mean, you can't put a price on that.
No, you can't. Especially when for somebody it is a cup of coffee or a tea or a, you know,
exactly.
You know, something to eat. So that's amazing. That generosity always blows my mind. It's really easy to forget how generous people can be. I mean, absolutely. I'm assuming that because you're wearing the Samaritans t-shirt as you're doing this,
so yeah,
you are, you know, well branded and well recognized. I'm assuming you're getting stopped quite frequently then to talk and engage with people about this.
Because the t-shirt, you've probably seen it on some of the pictures, it says Samaritans and then walking 6,000 miles.
Yes.
So you get sort of different people. Some people see the Samaritans and go, Samaritans, brilliant. You know, I think it's amazing what you do. There was a guy stopped me on the edge of Croydon the other week. And, there was two guys stood at the on just outside a car dealership, and they obviously worked there, and they were having a bit of a fag, and I walked past, and then one of them, I was just walking, and I heard this voice say, excuse me, and I turned around, it was one of the guys, and he had £5, and he said, take this £5, and I went, oh, and I did the usual, I said, look, take a card, you can do it online, he says, no, put that in your pocket, and he said, Samaritans, you saved my life, and right. And it obviously come away from his mate because he wanted to keep it, you know, quiet and confidential.
Yeah, discreet, yes.
And I said, okay, thank you. And he started walking off, and I shouted after him. I said, thanks for that. And when he turned round, his mate couldn't see because he was blocking him. I said, are you all right? And he went, yeah, I'm all right now, thank you.
Oh, that's amazing.
The reputation of Samaritans is amazing, you know, and that's why I feel quite honoured to be able to represent them and be an advocate for them. You know, I feel quite proud to be out there and for people to stop me and talk about it. It's amazing.
Well, it's a household name anyway, the charity goes. It is a, you know, nationally recognised charity. They advertise well, and, you know, I don't think many people know the Samaritans number. I don't, but, you know, everyone knows to search for the Samaritans and has heard of it. I'm sure there's not many people who haven't.
Yes.
Your goal, I want to go into the Samaritans in a bit and ask more about it, and kind of, I've got quite a few questions. I'm really interested. But your goal is to recruit 1,000 new volunteers for the Samaritans. Obviously that's really hard to measure as you're walking, how many people you've actually recruited, but have you got an idea how many people you may have inspired along the way to potentially volunteer? And is that even a discussion you're having with people who may be interested? Are people coming up to you and saying, how do I get involved in some way?
Yeah, it is really difficult because whenever I have a conversation with somebody in the street, and I've had lots. I always say that your local branch are always recruiting, and if ever you wanted to, they welcome you. And I only have one instance where I know it's actually worked, because when I was in Aberystwyth in Wales, and I didn't realise this until, you know, skip forward probably almost a year, when I got to Bridgend branch of the Samaritans, and I was sat having a cup of tea with some of the volunteers. I'd done the walk that day, and this lady walked in, and I recognised her, and I said, I know you. She says, yeah, you do know me. She said, we met in Aberystwyth a year ago, and I went, you were on the Macmillan cancer support bus, and she went, yeah, that's right, and she said, I came out of a sandwich shop with some food, and she said, you were just walking down the street, and we had a conversation, and I said I can't remember what we talked about, but I remember meeting. She says, well, actually, I was asking about the walk. She said, and you were so passionate about the Samaritans and the work they did. She said, when the pandemic hit, I lost my job, because obviously the bus couldn't go out because nobody could come to it. She said, and I was looking for something to do, and she said, I remembered the talk we'd had, and I volunteered for the Samaritans. She said, and although I was in Aberystwyth at the time with the bus, I live in Bridgend. Okay. She said, and now I've just qualified as a Samaritan. So,
How did it feel for you to hear that?
Oh, it was amazing. It was like, I was over the moon, to be honest, Matthew. I was like, I said, oh, that's amazing. And she said, yeah, it was down to you and that conversation. And And I said, now, how's it going? She says, well, I'm just like you now. I think it's such an amazing charity. She said, I'm so pleased we had that. I bumped into you. So it's like you say, it's difficult to measure how many people.
Of course, people, impossible.
Yeah.
But well, you are obviously having an impact on people.
Yeah, hopefully. And it's, yeah, it's people are, you know, becoming volunteers. And there's been a couple of friends who've messaged and sort of said, you know, I know you've been a Samaritan quite a while and you've always talked really highly about it. And now you've started the walk. I've thought, well, if you're going to walk 6,000 miles, I can join the local Samaritans branch. So there's been others as well. Whether or not it'll get to 1,000, I don't know. But you've got to sort of, you've got to set your stall out, haven't you? And sort of,
of course you have. You've got to put a number out there. And, yeah, you know, the number in itself is interesting, you know, that's what you'd like to get to. And actually, if you think about the amount of people you engage with and talk to and impact online, social media, then, you know, the handful of people who might listen to this podcast at some point, that has a knock-on effect. And whether they join tomorrow or in 10 years' time, that's still
absolutely
part of that building awareness.
And of course, that lady's, you know, she's having conversations in Bridgend.
Exactly.
How many people are going to join because of that?
Yes, and I'm sure the best the best people to recruit for Samaritans are existing Samaritans.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Who are, you know, it's a conversation starter. What do you do? You know, well, I work this job. Oh, but I also volunteer as a Samaritan in my spare time. And, you know, oh, that's really interesting. You know, what's that like, etc.
Absolutely.
You know, so that in itself is a conversation starter.
Absolutely.
So, if you don't mind me asking, David, and you don't have to answer this question if there's anything difficult attached to it, what made you volunteer yourself as a Samaritan? How long ago did you say you did it?
About 12 years.
12 years ago.
Yeah.
Was there a reason you started?
Yeah, probably. I first thought about Samaritans probably long before 12 years ago, because I had a friend, just like exactly like you've talked about there, who was a Samaritan, and he used to tell me about being a Samaritan and what they stood for, because I didn't really know much about it, and I thought, what a brilliant service that is. And then I was divorced, and so my first separation was quite difficult, and I struggled. And although I didn't call the Samaritans, I remembered these conversations I'd had, and I thought, I felt like there was a safety net. So if I wanted to use it, I could. And in the end, I didn't, but it was almost like, I don't have to completely fall. There's this little safety net called the Samaritans, because I remember talking to Stuart about it, my friend.
Okay.
So I got through that, and then still didn't become a Samaritan, and I went on with other life. And then I remarried, and I got divorced a second time, and wasn't quite as traumatic, because you sort of, you know, you remember just the things you need to go through to get through it.
Okay.
But what it did was I thought, well, I don't need the Samaritans, there's lots of people out there who are going through what I've been through, and lots of other things that they do need the Samaritans. So why don't I go, well, okay, I know it's been there as a safety net. I know I could have used it. And it's so inadvertently, it's been a support for me. Why don't I then go forward and go, well, I'd like to be part of that support for somebody else. So
I see it.
So my experiences were, although I didn't get to that point, I could recognise that, you know, other people would get to that point, and there's a need to support those people. So I went and went to an information evening. It's interesting because when I was on the campsite, I was just packing up this morning. One of the things that I sort of think is such a, we're there 24/7 for people, the Samaritans. But one of the things that I think is such a crucial thing and such a strong thing for the Samaritans is that when people do get that point at 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, when they're wide awake, they can't sleep, and they've the mind's just in turmoil and these thoughts going around. Everyone else is sure. You know, all the mental health support, the counsellors, the local GP, they're all shut. So who's available? The Samaritans.
Yeah.
And I've always said that to people. Well, funnily enough, on the campsite this morning, this guy came over and started asking about my walking trailer. I was just packing my gear up and we had a nice conversation. And this guy would be 70.
Okay.
And so we had a lovely conversation. And just as he was walking off, he said, it's brilliant, the Samaritans. And it was obviously a little bit tricky for him to talk about it. And because we chatted for 15 minutes, he said nothing. Mm. He said, brilliant, Samaritans. He says, they saved me. And I went, oh, great. And he sort of stopped maybe 20 feet away. There was nobody else about.
Yeah.
And he said, I phoned them once, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. He said, I was going through lots of stuff.
Wow.
And he said, I had half an hour talking to somebody. He said, it just cleared my mind. He said, set me off again. He said, I've been right ever since.
So that's happened twice that you've mentioned. Is that quite a common occurrence that people have said to you as you're walking?
Oh, loads.
I have spoken, really? Loads.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Loads.
And people talk quite openly about friends or family that have taken their own life and stuff like that, you know.
Mm.
And I don't know if that's good. I don't know if that's just because it says Samaritans on my T-shirt or because also as a Samaritan, one of the things that part of the training is about, you know, how you do listen to people and how you give them the space to talk a little bit. So it doesn't have to be anything, it's not major scientific thing, it's just, you know, somebody saying something and then you're just responding in a way that allows them to talk about something rather than going, oh, well, thanks for telling me that, I've got to get off now, you know, it's, brilliant, well, I hope you feel better soon, see you, bye, you know. To be able to just go, well, that's interesting. What happened there then? You know, or how are you now? Or, you know, it's just simple questions.
To stay present with how they're feeling rather than to sort of just make them feel better by kind of, you know, throwing positive ideas at them. You're just there to listen.
That's right. Yeah. You know, anyone can throw a soundbite out there, but it's worthless. And I'm not saying that because people don't always feel comfortable. And then if somebody does start opening up, you know, they don't feel able to talk or to be able to cope with that. I get that. That's fine. But obviously, you know, I've been a Samaritan 12 years, so people can, they can talk about whatever they want. And that's fine.
So on that, I want to jump into learning a bit about what's involved from the start. So there's obviously a demand for Samaritans. And obviously I went on the website the other day when researching for this, and there is an increase in people wanting to join.
Yes.
But for those who might be sort of on the bench and considering it, or may even have started to consider after listening to this episode, where do you start? So obviously you go onto the website or ring up and you join an enrollment day or an information day.
So basically,
what goes on from there?
Yeah, basically, sort of, you register your interest, and obviously tell them where you are. So it'll instantly link you up with your local branch, and then your local branch will probably then get in touch and go, right, we've got an awareness day. It's all a little bit changed at the moment because obviously those kind of things haven't been allowed and the branches have been on this ridiculous lockdown. It's got a bit too much, to be honest, because the branches are still like Alcatraz, you know, they're locked down. But normally what would happen is they'd go, right, we're going to have something like an awareness day. But a lot of that has been done online now, which is just as valid and useful. What people are also, there's like a almost like an interview process, almost, because there's no point if you've just come through a relationship breakup or a bereavement, or you've had a particularly tough time and you're not in a great place, you're not in the great place to also support other people that maybe aren't in a great place. So It isn't just a case of, oh, great, these people have applied, let's get them out and on the phones. It's a lot more, they delve a little bit deeper than that.
Okay.
What
happens then in the training after?
Well,
what
happens then, you'll go into the training, and the training is the same across the country. So if you did the training in Cornwall, and then so if you were sort of thinking, well, it's no point in doing it because I might be moving jobs in a couple of years, this training is the same in Cornwall as it is in Durham.
So, and you can do that training in your local branch. You don't need to travel anywhere.
And a lot of it's done online now as well.
Okay.
So, and then there's and the training is absolutely thorough. It's brilliant. So, as you can imagine, some of the calls you're going to get around suicide, self harm, difficult things. But this it doesn't scare over any of that. It's tackled head on. So it's like, right, this is what we do in this situation, and you need to expect that you might get this sort of call. So let's look at that. And the training is done around all that. So, and we do skills practice, so people get chance to hear calls from fellow volunteers, but authentic calls. But then after the training, which is about, what depends how the branches do it, but there's about 8 sessions. So some branches do a couple of sessions to get you going.
How long is a session?
Is probably about 2.5 to 3 hours.
Okay, so 2.5 to 3 hour training sessions.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're looking at maybe 20 hours in total, spread over a number of weeks.
Yeah.
And then once you've gone through that, you get assigned a mentor. So you're not just then put out on the phones. You get a mentor. You can you sit with them. They take you through the whole thing about, this is what you do when you get to the branch. This is how we do this at the branch. So there's a lot of the logistics as well as going right, and this is this is how we handle this call. This is how we do that. So let's start taking calls. And what happens normally is that the mentee, the trainee, are listening to the mentor on the calls.
Okay.
And that, so they'll be hearing a real voice for the first time.
Yeah.
But their mentor is taking the call, so they can see how that's handled. And then you're mentored for 6 sessions. So halfway through that, your mentor will say, well, you take a call now, but I'll listen in. And and there's a little notepad that can guide you and give you little notes and things like that. And then after 6 sessions, you become a what we call a probationer. I think they've changed the term now, but you're a probationer. And in every branch, there's always at least 2 Samaritans on shift at any one time.
Hmm.
So when you're a probationer, the other Samaritan cannot be a probationer. They have to be an experienced Samaritan. So if you have a difficult call, you can always shout your shift partner over, and they're an experienced Samaritan. And then after 6 months, another 6 months, of being a probationer, you become a fully fledged Samaritan, and you could then mentor. So it's a quite a drawn out process.
Yes.
But it's very thorough.
Yeah.
Very supportive. You're nurtured through it. And at all times you've got the support that you need.
But it should be a thorough process though, shouldn't it? Because obviously the calls are of a sensitive nature. So
Absolutely.
People, you know, in that situation, dealing with somebody who say, for example, is talking about taking their own life, you know, with little training, it wouldn't be helpful. So it's really nice to hear how thorough the training is.
Absolutely. And then also as well, even though there's 2 Samaritans on duty, on shift at each branch, some have more, but the basic is 2. You also have a shift leader who's at home. So if at any time during your shift, there's a difficult time, or you sort of feel, well, now it was a difficult call, I need to talk to somebody, that duty leader is at home just waiting. They might be watching TV, but their phone is there, and you can phone any time and go, can I just talk to you about this? And they're there to support you as well. So the support net is amazing.
So you've got up to two people in the offices at any one time taking the calls.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it can be more than two.
It can.
And then should any of those people need to talk to somebody and the person in the office isn't available to talk to, there's another backup person to talk to who's at home.
Yeah.
So there's a great deal of support by the sounds of it for the volunteers as well, because I'm assuming there must be plenty of occasions, especially maybe when you first start, but obviously as you go on as well, where you do take a call which just, you know, hits you at the core, and you do need to just step back and talk to somebody, or go and have a cry about what you've heard.
And then we also, there's a defined role at every branch as well, which is called volunteer support. This is completely separate to the leader and everything like that, but so if you've had a particularly difficult call and you spoke to your leader and your leader goes, oh, it sounds like you've had a difficult call, David, let's talk about that. If they think that that's been a particularly traumatic call for you, they will phone the volunteer support, and the following day, the volunteer support will phone you and go, right, David, spoke to your leader, apparently had this difficult call, how are you feeling today? So there's a next layer of support, which is called the volunteer support, because the Samaritans feel that unless the volunteers are in a good place, they're not in the best place to take the calls from the callers. So
of course,
the volunteer care is paramount.
Okay, that's really interesting and really nice to know, actually. So what does a typical shift look like? What's the expectation, for example, as to how much time they should volunteer, and also then what does the shift itself look like?
Yeah, this has been quite interesting because as a volunteer, you tend to just be at your own branch, that's it. So I've had this unique insight because I've been to all these branches, and they vary. I'd say on average, the most common shift is probably 3 hours. That's probably the most common length of the shift.
Yeah. And is that because of the time, the amount of mental energy it takes to deal with those calls just means that after 3 hours, the people generally just go, I need to stop now?
Yeah, probably. Some of the branches do 4 hour shifts, some do 2.5, but 3 hours is probably an optimum time to be able to go, okay, I've been on the calls, it's been quite difficult evening or afternoon or morning or whatever. 3 hours is probably enough. It's probably an optimum time, I think. And some branches have 4 hours, but normally across the country, most branches expect one shift a week. So it's not a massive, it's not a massive commitment. So one shift a week, if it's 3 hours, is like 12 hours. If it's 4 hours, it's 16 hours. So average is 12 to 16 hours across all the branches. So sometimes you might be able to do like two shifts a week or something. You might be able to go out on Monday and Saturday.
You can choose as many as you want to do, I'm assuming.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. It's all done. 99% of the branches now all do it electronically. So there's an app, you just have it on your phone. And if you sort of think, right, well, I know I'm going to be finishing work on Thursday afternoon early, I can log on. Oh, look, there's a shift available at my local branch. And you can drop your name in and go, yeah, I'll fill that gap.
Okay. Wow. Okay. That's really good. And how many members of staff are there in branches? Obviously, that's going to differ from a busy office in London to one on the Isle of Orkney or something. But sort of generally, how many would you find you in an office on average?
Well, we what we see
and
is
that's members of staff who actually volunteer as a whole, not just in one go.
So we call them listening volunteers. So we'd say active listeners. So for example, at Hitchin, they've got something at somewhere in the region of about 70 active listening volunteers.
Oh, that's loads. That's way more than I thought.
And then some branch like London Central Branch, which is quite a big branch, have probably got 400 plus.
Oh, wow. Wow. So, I didn't expect that. I thought you were going to say 12 or something.
That's no. Yeah. The smallest branch I've visited is Orkney, and they've got 6.
Okay. Yeah. So, but even, I mean, and then the Orkney one, is that manned 24/7?
No.
Or no?
So Orkney will, if there's 6, they'll go, well, you have to have two people on at any one time. So they might do, because the 6 of them do 3 shifts in a week, so they might do 3 4-hour shifts. So out of the whole week, they might cover 12 hours.
Oh, I see.
But of course, now we have this national number. It's a national free phone number. All that happens is that if somebody called right now, it would be sent to the next available phone.
So the next available phone that's on nationally.
Yes.
So
if I found,
so it wouldn't be sent to a local office. It would be sent to somebody within the charity as a whole.
Yes. On the phones. So if I phone now tonight from Hitchin, I might speak to somebody in Carlisle. Because out of the 199 branches, there's maybe, it would be less than 10 branches will have enough listening volunteers to be available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But then the rest of us, like Doncaster's got about 60 listening volunteers, the rest of us will maybe do 50% of the 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But at any one time, there might be, there's 20,000 listening volunteers across the UK and Ireland. So at any one time, there might be 200 to 300 available on a phone.
Okay. Yeah. So with, say, when you have 200 to 300 available, are the volume of calls that come into the Samaritans enough to keep 200 to 300 people busy? So for instance, you'd be hanging up a phone call, having finished with one person, straight away it rings again with the next person.
It does, yeah.
Does it?
Yeah.
So it is constantly full on.
It is.
People constantly needing that help. And does that run even into the night as well?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we still have times when there's not enough volunteers to take the volume of calls.
Really? And are there any times of year that tends to be worse?
Yeah,
Christmas. In terms of volume?
Christmas.
Yeah. Wow.
I tend to volunteer quite a lot at Christmas because, you know, I'm on my own now, so I tend to sort of let the other volunteers have time with their families and things.
It's a hotbed for emotion, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And it is one call after another, and I've had times when people have phoned up and said, you know, thank God somebody's there. I've been trying for half an hour to get through and I couldn't get through. And so I find that difficult because, you know, we're the last line of defence, really. So if you're at that point when, okay, you might have had a bad day and you want to talk to somebody, okay, that's still not great. But if you're at the point when you're sat with a bottle of vodka and 3 bottles of tablets and you're considering whether you're going to take them, and it's taking you half an hour to get through to talk to somebody that might or might not alleviate those feelings, that's difficult.
And what does it feel like? I hope you don't mind me asking these questions, but for me, as somebody who's interested, I think it's important to understand. What does it feel like taking that call? Because at that point, the responsibility on you, I guess, must feel enormous, because you might be, obviously, I'd like to say, if somebody does take their own life, that, you know, that wouldn't be your fault. But as the person who's handling that call and could potentially be the last person that individual speaks to, that must feel like an enormity of responsibility on your shoulders to personally to deal with that. Is that right?
Yeah. And But that's dealt with in the training, Matthew. Do you know what I mean?
It's, of course, yeah.
And in quite a lot of detail, because we're not there to, we're there to let people explore.
Yeah, you're not there to talk people down and say, oh, no, don't do it. Absolutely. I'm sure. Yeah, of course.
But
of
course. I've also had moments when people have talked to me for an hour, 2 hours even, when they've been sat there with the tablets, and they've said, they've openly said, I'm sat here now and this is the end. Can I just talk to you? And then we've talked for an hour, 2 hours or 3 hours even at times. And then they've said, well, I'm going to put the bottle and the tablets to one side. I'm going to go to bed now. I'm going to see what tomorrow brings.
Yeah.
You can't ask any more than that.
No, of course you can't. No, of course you can't.
So, and you also get, part of the training is about how we deal with that. And of course, that's when you speak to your leader, your volunteer care, because you've done what you need to do. And you can't go home thinking, well, what are they going to do tomorrow? You can't. You can't. You've got to go home and go, right, I was there tonight for that person, and let's let them see what tomorrow brings. And of course, you always leave the call by going, well, look, tomorrow, if you're here again at this point, phone us again. It's fine.
So always there for that person, absolutely. Regardless of how many times they want to call. Amazing. Amazing. Well, that was really sobering, actually, for me to listen to, because, you know, that stuff gets me. I mean, you know, I can't. I'm fortunate that I've never been in a position like that before. You know, I've had, like many of us, I've had depression, but I've never had been at that point where I've had to call somebody because it's been that bad. So that, you know, what Samaritans do is remarkable. So what would you recommend for anybody who has considered joining?
Go for it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because there's no, there's nothing lost, because we always say to, the thing with Samaritans, it's brutally honest. It is brutally honest. So the first training session, because I've led training sometimes, I've gone, look, if at week three you go, I can't cope with this, it's not for me, just come and say, David, I'm not going to come next week, it's not for me. There's no grilling or, right, well, why is that? You know, it's thank you for coming for 3 weeks, appreciate that. Good luck with everything. Take care. But what you will get from it personally at the end of, first of all, at the end of the training, because it will change your whole perspective about conversations, because your listening skills will just completely change. Mm. So instead of doing that thing where, you know, I'm thinking, right, Matthew's talking now, but I'm not really taking in what Matthew's talking about. I'm waiting to make a point based on what he said on his first sentence. So, right, okay, come on, Matthew, carry on. Yeah, come on, are you going to shut up in a minute? Because I want to make a point based on that. You get to the point when you're just listening to that person completely until they've finished, and then there might be a bit of a gap while you're digesting it and they're sort of thinking, oh, they're just... And then the conversation carries on based on what has happened, and your conversations outside the Samaritans will go into the stratosphere, because it will change, and you'll just get to the point when you'll go, actually, my listening skills, I can't believe how they've changed, not just on the phone for the people who call, but my friends and my family or strangers I meet in the street. It will change everything, and it'll be... So if anybody's sat there going, you know, I've thought about it, should I do it or not? Well, go for it. Because even if you, after a few months or a couple of years, you go, well, I can't do it anymore, it will give you skills and change your life in a way that you can't even imagine.
And I'm really, really glad you said that, because I think with anything like this, it's okay to want to have a selfish motive with it too. In addition to doing something because it's a good thing to do and it's helpful and it changes people's lives and, you know, or just changes people's days or these bad moments. It's really nice to know that there is something positive that they, you know, volunteers get out of it as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Brilliant. So I think we'll finish on that.
Thank you.
Really, really enjoyed today. It's been really, really good podcast. So thank you so much for joining. So how long have you got left? And how can people follow you as well?
I'll probably finish the walk, I think, round about the second week of November.
Okay.
At the moment on Facebook, it's because I started off, you start with nobody. And then,
of course, yeah.
But at the moment, there's sort of well over 2,000 followers on Facebook now, and there's well over 1,000 on Twitter. I'm not so good on Instagram, but I think that's sort of growing a little bit as well.
Yeah.
So, and of course, these things speed up as well. So I've noticed that there's more people start following and joining as you go along.
Yeah, as you get to a point, it starts to accumulate quicker, doesn't
it? That's right, yeah. Mm. So, and it's great because, you know, I've just put today's little thing up and, you know, I reached Pitching Branch. I've done a picture, and I always do a few pictures about, you know, what's happened along the way and people I've met. And they're always really well received. People make nice comments about,
of course they are,
you know, lovely pictures today.
It's hard not to.
It's amazing. And you know, so it's, although it takes time and a bit of effort to do, you know, each day I sort of think, well, I better put something up because people will be waiting for something.
And then
people have commented and said, you know, and said, I look forward to your posts every day. And it's funny because sometimes people I've met, they've said, oh, my friend so-and-so follows you. And recently, actually, this happened. My friend so-and-so follows you, and they're a little bit older and they're quite isolated. And they don't have a lot of interaction with people. But I was telling them about your walk, so they now follow you on Facebook. One of the highlights of the day is waiting for your post to appear later on the day, because they want to look at the pictures, they want to see where you've been and see something. And I thought, I think the whole thing, Matthew, has become bigger than I actually realise it is at times.
I'm sure it has. I'm sure. And, you know, it'll continue to do so, especially if you're going till November. You'll continue to accumulate interests, and you know, as much as it's easy to slate the internet and has a lot of shortfalls.
Yeah.
In addition, it's amazing for growing awareness of causes like
absolutely,
this.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you've got a target of £100,000.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to hit that.
Do you not?
Okay. No.
How much have you raised so far? I've not
looked. With gift aid at the moment, it's about 16.
Okay.
So I've got to the point now where I sort of think, okay, well, I think if some national TV program or some celebrity suddenly picked it up and went, wow, this is amazing, I think, yeah, okay, fair enough. But I think as I am now, I'm sort of thinking, well, if I could get sort of 30,000 or whatever, I think it will speed up again towards the end.
I think it will.
And also, I'm quite proud in the fact that I'm not sort of saying to people, right, come on, donate.
But yeah, you're not rattling the can. You're just sharing. And if people want to join in and donate, and
absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
Then that's, yeah.
But right. I think what I'll do at the end, I think the last month probably, I will go, right, come on, I'm a month away. Please donate if you can, you know. And give it a bit of a push then.
Yeah, brilliant. So where can people find you on Facebook? What's your Facebook page?
If they put really the listening walk, if they put the listening walk into Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, it pretty much comes up with it all. I think the Facebook one is something like at over 6,000 miles or something, but when I've been with people, when they've had the phone, I've said, just put the listening walk in, and they put the listening walk in, and it appears it's the first one that comes up.
Amazing. That's great. Well, I'll link it into the show as well, so people can follow it here.
Thank you.
And we'll share this around, and hopefully you'll get some good interest from this, because as I said, I've been thoroughly looking forward to talking to you today.
Oh, thank you. No, it's been
a real pleasure. For me personally, you know, as I said to you before we did the show, you know, I wanted to at some point volunteer as a Samaritan, you know, so asking you these questions was very much a personal endeavor for me to try and find some more information about it. So definitely something I will be doing in the future.
Oh,
I hope that some listeners will be encouraged and inspired by this too.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. So, good. That's good.
Brilliant. All right. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah,
it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
And I look forward to following you over the next few months and hopefully catching up with you again soon.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Matthew.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah, bye-bye.
So, how did you enjoy that episode? Do let me know if you listened and enjoyed it, as I would love to hear your feedback. The Distance Hiker podcast is also now on Apple Podcasts, which means you can subscribe and rate us. I would love for you to rate the podcast, and I think you can leave a review on there. I don't actually have an iPhone or use Apple Podcasts, but we are now on there after a long, drawn-out sort of battle to try and get the show on there. It didn't need to be quite as difficult as it was, but we are now on there. Anyway, thank you again for listening to that show. David was super interesting and really easy to talk to. So thank you so much for joining me on the show today, David. It was great. I was a bit in awe of the logistical challenge behind what David was doing. It struck me as being very different to anything I've ever heard of before. And, you know, we're so used as hikers being able to walk from point A to point B, and, you know, you can wild camp along the route, as, you know, most routes are. Wild camping is not legal and I don't endorse it. Most routes do have places where you can wild camp or campsites dotted along the route, which are quite accessible. However, in his case, you know, the idea of having to walk from one town to the next, well, you know, doing a diversion up to a local campsite to add some sort of reliability into what he's doing seemed really challenging. And not only that, David then had to, didn't have to, but he's volunteering his time talking to people on the phones when he gets to the Samaritan's offices, or the branches as they're called. It struck me as being really difficult to pull that off, and I applaud David for being able to do it with such grace and humility, with a big smile on his face. The challenge looks amazing. It's such a lifetime experience, and, you know, skydiving was a really good second choice, but I definitely can see why David decided to do this long distance walk. So it was a complete pleasure, my pleasure, to have David on the show today, and I got a ton of value out of this episode, and I hope you did too. Anyway, that is it for now. Thank you so much for listening to the Distance Hiker podcast with me, your host, Matthew.